Friends, hi, I'm with Naveen Tiwari, founder of India's first unicorn, and he's consented to share a fascinating journey of entrepreneurship and lessons from his journey. Thanks so much for hosting us in the office, Naveen. It's always a pleasure to be here. It's just got fantastic energy, and for the last however many years I've been coming here.
And absolutely welcome, Vikram, and thank you for inviting me to the show. And I love your socks, by the way, and they are so bright that I'm just absolutely enjoying having this conversation with you while getting distracted by your socks.
It's in keeping with your office.
Ah, there you are.
I'm going to give my introduction to Naveen. I mean, he really needs no intro. Maybe most people don't know, he was born and brought up in Kanpur, on the IIT Kanpur. In the IIT Kanpur campus, born to academics, met his wife when he was 10 years old in fifth standard, both...
She didn't become my wife when she was 10.
Well, that's true. Over a very long courtship, lasting from Kanpur all the way across different cities.
Grit and perseverance was always there, you know.
Absolutely. His early journey spans IIT Kanpur, McKinsey, HBS, Charles River Ventures. I would like to say his journey really started when he founded InMobi as MCoach. Personal story about Naveen and me. I blame as well as equal parts blame and credit Naveen for getting me into the VC space. I was at McKinsey doing a project on digital India, and Naveen was the expert on call. And at the end of that call, I realized I know nothing about tech, and that's not acceptable to me because I started life as an engineer and decided to take the plunge. I must tell you, in all my arrogance at that time, I thought I'll do whatever Naveen did, which is went to McKinsey, then went to Charles River Ventures, which is a VC, and figure out what space is hot and what space is happening, and then I'll start out in that space. But I became a VC and I realized how hard a founder's life is. Also realized that I would not make a great founder, but found my calling in early stage venture capital. So for that, I thank you.
I love your humility, by the way.
But all of this has led to a lasting friendship. I truly treasure that. So thanks for the time. We'll keep this conversation freewheeling. And you know, given that we are at your office, I thought we'll start with early days at InMobi. People know the transition from MCoach to InMobi, but what do you really remember from those early days?
You know, I think the first of all, thank you for the introduction. It was just it's good to remember some of these old days. And I don't know whether you want to thank me for the shift to this wild, crazy world of startups or not. But I think the many founders out there really love having you on their side. So I would congratulate you on how you are perceived within the founding community. So great work on and being a, you know, not you, an entrepreneur friendly yet return giving venture capitalist. I hope the return giving is already happening. I shall also know at some point of time. But I think on the early days of InMobi or MCoach, as we started off back in 2007, 2008, almost 11 years ago, I think I think you're asking about the stake. I think it's very lonely in those, you know, it's very lonely in the beginning. And nothing seems to make sense. And you know, you always want to give up. And I think that, you know, when you want to give up and your quest to, you know, continue has very limited reasons, and you know, rational mind doesn't allow you to continue. And I think, you know, I personally wanted to give up many times, probably, you know, once or twice a day at times. You know, it reached those stages where you just wanted to just, you know, kind of give up. And I think we didn't. And I think that to me was one of the most memorable pieces of that time. And I think from a, you know, things that I thought we. I always tell people who do things today to have done differently at that point of time would, I don't think when we started MCoach, the idea of MCoach was big. The idea of MCoach was relatively very limited. I would say, you know, in today's world, if you're trying to become a, you know, trying to start a tech company, Anyway, it's going to be a hell of a ride. Anyway, it's going to be very tough. Anyway, it's not going to be easy. You will not have a life. So why not actually go for something which is going to be big, right? So instead of trying to do something which is small. So I would, you know, say at least that to be a thing that I would go back, probably correct.
So I know you advise a bunch of founders, you've invested in a bunch of companies. What do you do? And I know that you've played a role in shaping some of their ideas, or at least their go-to-market, to make sure that they go after the big ideas. How do you do some of that today?
Look, I think, you know, people are generally very smart. All the co-founders, and you know them a lot better than I probably do. Some very, very smart people. And, you know, everyone is not, no one struggles with, you know, capability. No one struggles with, you know, hard work or, able to tell a story. Most of them can actually do it. Nobody, you know, struggles with these basic things. They are essentially captive of their own thinking in some shape and form. And, you know, obviously having done this for 10 plus years, that, you know, there is one thing I probably know is, you know, that they are captive of their own thinking. And so the only thing I probably try to do is to help them see slightly bigger picture of their own idea. I can't probably draw that out for them because they should do it and they will do a better job than me. But as much as possible, if they could see a bigger picture of their own business, they might change the direction. So my view in life has been that if you put a goalpost, which is slightly far out there, it's not that you need to be rigid about it completely, but you at least chart out paths to get there, differently if the goalpost were at a different level. And if it's too close by, you take a different path, but that's not going to get you to the bigger play. So I think that's largely what, you know, I try to do. And I enjoy it because, you know, when some of those guys, you know, later on come back and say, hey, I did this, you know, you feel satisfied because those are businesses that you can never be in. So, but I also don't make money like you would by investing in them. But at least I enjoy
doing that. I think that's a topic for another day on who's more successful as an investor. But I love the phrase on captive of their own thinking. In our parlance, we call it outside in, which is just go seek ideas from outside about your idea and about pretty much every aspect of your business. And that's a great way to actually make your own idea much bigger. I'm going to switch gears to InMobi and the fantastic organization that you built. One aspect of the organization, which is this big international org, you've gone after so many markets. Some markets you opened, some markets you expanded, some markets you stepped back from. What's the learning on building this international org and the secret sauce to it?
Look, in the beginning, when we decided to go for an international market, it was more as a forcing function for us because in the around 2010 or so, the digital markets in countries like India or even in Asia was relatively smaller. So we were frankly forced to figure this problem out, which seemed like a daunting one to begin with because, you know, everybody rightly would say it's a very hard problem to solve. You know, people struggle to solve things for India. But I think the thing that you find when you, you know, kind of jump into a hard problem, that it's actually not that hard when you are into it. So part one, at least to me, was it's not as hard as we think it is, by the way. You know, if you put your mind to, you know, a few countries and a few markets, you can actually go and solve for it. And you'll have to figure out whether you have to make changes to the go-to-market phenomena, you know, by market. Do you have to have a different org strategy by market? Do you need to also have a different tech strategy by market? And, you know, as you go deeper, it becomes harder and harder and harder, by the way. So if you need to have a different tech strategy for a different market, then it's a very hard problem to solve. The second, we never sent anybody from India to set up those markets. We always hired a local person and we had that person, you know, lead the market in. And so in scenarios where that worked, it worked brilliantly. And in scenarios where we got a wrong person, it failed miserably. And, you know, it had nothing to do with the market or the size of the market or anything. You know, it was just literally boiled down to the leader in the market. And if the market worked, great. We exactly knew why it worked. If it failed, we exactly knew why it failed. In hindsight, by the way, I would make a statement to say maybe, you know, we could have done a better job of, you know, kind of, you know, sending few people from our home base to act as a strong connect back to the mothership. And we didn't do that then because we probably didn't even have enough people to who could do these kind of, you know, roles, and maybe just didn't even get it. But, you know, that certainly worked out well.
So the prevailing wisdom is, you know, get somebody from the founding team to move. And, you know, I know now Abhay has been convinced or volunteered to move to the US. How big has that been?
No, no. And I think, by the way, you know, that's the other learning that I had was, or we actually all had as a founding team member is, you know, there are places in which we can have an effect, you know, have an impact. There are places we cannot have an impact, right? So, for example, in China, even if we move, I don't know what impact we can really, really have, right? It's just, you know, we have limitations of our own in terms of what we could potentially have done. And it was also a very risky market for us to say, hey, if we even go there, we don't even know whether, you know, at the end of 3 years we'll have anything or not. But markets like US, I completely agree with you. For the past 5 to 6 years now, we have had one co-founder or the other actually based out of the US. Amit was there before Abhay was there, and then Abhay went in there. So when Amit first moved to US, our business was about 15% of our total business was 15%. Today it's about 55% comes from the US. So, you know, we obviously were able to scale US business in general to a quite an extent.
Shifting gears and talking about the culture at InMobi, I've always been amazed at the quality of talent that you've been able to attract here. What do you think has been integral to you being able to attract that kind of talent, whether it's from the IIT than I am, from McKinsey? It's a one signal of pedigree, but you've always been able to attract these guys. And, you know, second part of that question is that InMobi has also spawned lots of entrepreneurs. You've created this entrepreneurial atmosphere internally. I know you have an area for entrepreneurs in InMobi, and you're very comfortable letting go. You invest in all of them. How have you created all of this?
You know, there was, and this kind of goes back to a story that let me just lay out that story before I answer this question, because it's not something that, you know, that came in. I would argue our culture wasn't something like this on day zero. You know, there was a point of time that we said, hey, we just have to be a different company to a certain extent. You know, in about 2012, 2013, when, you know, we were rapidly growing and we saw, you know, we had massive funding and we just were hiring people and, you know, all the right things that we thought logically we were going to do, we realized that we didn't grow as we were investing. In fact, we thought we would grow, you know, 3x or something in a specific year, I think 2013 or something. And we only grew like 40%, which is not bad, but it was not 3x. And we had probably an attrition of like 30-35%. And, you know, our company became like a revolving door.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And it caused a lot of pain in me personally, because I was like, hey, I think we have everything right. You know, look at the headlines, look at the revenue growth, look at the potential. Everything was right, but nobody was staying. And it hit me at that point of time is that the headlines, the external headlines are a great way to get people in, but the core strength of the organization is the one that keeps people there. And so it was the first time in my life where I was able to, you know, segregate between these two things. And so whenever I personally now look at any organization, I look at, are good people staying there or are good people leaving? I don't, for example, worry about what the media is necessarily saying, because I know people internally will know what the company is all about. Now this is a great state to be in, but how do you get to this specific state? So our view on this was, let's build this place as a place. It was a very simple, you know, thing for me, by the way. Let's build this place as a place where I would want to be. That was it. Let's do anything and everything that I would want to do. And I'm not a eccentric person of, you know, extreme nature or anything of that sort. That, you know, I said, look, if
we can debate some of this, but yeah.
You know, it was simple enough to say, if I, what kind of environment do I like to work on? All right, I like to work in an environment where I'm given freedom. Okay. What kind of interactions do you like to have? I like to have respectable interactions. What kind of a, you know, system do you like? Well, I like a system that where, you know, I'm trusted. What kind of a growth do you like? Well, I like growth, growing in, you know, professionally and personally, and I want to learn more things. What kind of, you know, people do you want to, you know, surround yourself with? Well, people that I would want to be surrounded with, irrespective of whether they worked in Mobi or not. I just want great people around me. So we then kind of use these very simple, you know, overtly simple, frankly, would ask me things, and then said, okay, let's just build policies around this. So every policy of ours was basically built around this. For example, I'll give you one more. Do I really like to be asked and, you know, given marks at the end of a quarter or a year to say, hey, you did, you know, if I would ask somebody, hey, how did I do? Well, it seems that you got 3.7 out of 5. He's like, you know, we're not in school anymore, right? We can't do these kind of things. So we changed everything, and we basically tried to convert Inmobi into a place where people can come in and have the freedom. You have freedom to essentially go and work in any other team that you want. Because why? Well, you know, each one of us, you know, think of yourself, right? What do you enjoy about your job? The fact that you can work with many people in different environments. And it took us a year. And from that day onwards, we have not touched it. We don't spend anything trying to build a culture or do anything, because this is it. This is who we are. And we don't try to fake it. We don't try to, like, create programs around, hey, let's, you know, hey, what's my culture budget and what should, because we don't need it anymore. It's just, it is who we are, and this is how we're going to stay. And, you know, what that has done, by the way, is when we are in tough times, which I think every company gets to, we'll tell them, hey, we are in tough times. Please help. And they will, you know, they'll all, you know, it's funny whenever once or twice we've been in tough times, you know, it's like a family that comes together right now. Now, I know for a fact that if you build that out there, I can have different strategies. You know, today, you know, we have three companies that we talk about, or maybe there's something else, or the strategy for the marketing advertising business of our changes, all of that is fine. But if this is there, I know I can build something for a long period of time. So that's why it's important to me, and we didn't even do too much to get there, by the way. We just did some simple things.
Firstly, it just shows, you know, how much thought you've put into this and how close it is to your heart. And the one thing I will take away is, you know, build a place where you would work. And I think that's a great way of thinking about culture for founders. Talking about tough times, I know Inmobi had its fair share of ups and downs, and at times public, with a lot of noise around it. And sometimes, you know, you get support from your internal guys, sometimes you don't get support, sometimes you don't get support from external people that you thought you would. How do you drown out all the noise? And I know grit and perseverance is big on your list, but, in you know, take us through some of those moments. What keeps you grounded and centered, and what's helped you through some of those downs?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, tough periods are very common. And I think some companies in today's startup world, you know, get accolades, far higher accolades than what they deserve. Like, in us, you know, in as part of that. Or we get beaten down far more than we should for the mistakes that we would have done, right? So it swings both ways, extremes, and you learn to accept that to begin with. Yes, and, you know, we were 3-4 years ago, we were publicly, you know, media ripped us apart to say, hey, you know, the company's dead. And, you know, it was one of those things which you didn't know to begin with, you know, how to handle it. And because you looked internally, you were going through a little bit of tough phase, but you didn't realize that, you know, what you were being told by the external, and therefore the pressure on you, was so much outside in as against inside out, to say, hey, I don't know how to really handle this. There was a sense of being dismissive about it. There was a sense of saying, look, you know, everybody is against you. And you have all of these emotions that kind of rile you up to begin with. I think what gives you comfort is to kind of look inside the company and talk to people internally and really talk to them and say, hey, look, I know we're getting beaten outside. What do you think? And you see some of their responses. And the people internally will be genuine with you, right? And so when that happened for us with us for the first time, you know, I kind of gathered the courage to go and talk to my own team to say, hey, look, I know we are getting beaten from outside. Do you really think it's all true, or am I just blinded because I'm like this optimistic, founder, and am I not seeing something? And the response internally probably gave me the biggest strength, which was to say, hey, yes, Naveen, we have two issues and we have, 25 things which are going great for us. We have to solve for these two issues. Here are the ways that we can solve for it. And everybody, had their different versions of this. And my job was to, I kind of gathered a lot of, confidence back into the company personally, and which I could then reciprocate back. But also you could come back and say, this is how we're going to do this. I think what happened for us was we basically put our heads down and we said, we are not going to try and call out, anything which is going to be, hey, we're going to win the World Cup. We're going to say we're going to go one match by one match. And we called it out. In the beginning, we said month by month. Then we said quarter by quarter. Then we said, half yearly by half yearly. And we said yearly by yearly. And we just executed. And, we solved, one problem by the next problem. And, within the first 6 months, we were out of the woods. But that gave us, if you go and do this extreme exercises, right, whatever bodybuilding, extreme sports, you become very strong. And I thought as an organization, we went through that phase of, 6 to 9 months where we became very internally, our core strength was really, really strong. And a lot of the things that we did then, we do very systematically, right? We do it very properly. We don't, we don't splurge money. We don't, we don't do, random things. We just do them. And we don't also talk about it anymore because we realize that, talking about it too much is also not probably needed because it gets, you get hit both ways with it. So we just become more, we don't talk too much to media about those things anymore. But I think more importantly, I think some of the things that were put up at that point of time are now coming out, whether it's the company that we announced about a couple of months ago, which is True Factor, or Glance that we just became far more public with, and each of those companies are very large, by the way, but we never talked about them for the longest period of time. We kept them under the wraps and we kept executing. So, and all of that, I give a lot of credit to what happened 3-4 years ago, because it just do things much better now.
I think that's it's a beautiful story, and it gives you a glimpse into how much founders have to go through to actually build institutions. You and I have talked about this often, that the pendulum swings a lot, both positive and negative in our ecosystem, and even for investors it swings a lot. And we've spoken about the fact that you're, at least as an investor, my conviction is tested multiple times over the course of an investment. And, I've asked you for advice on some of this. What is your advice to investors when the pendulum is swinging the other way? And as an investor, my role is to, for some companies in that period, I have to double down on. Some companies I have to evaluate carefully and maybe they won't make it. So I'm playing that portfolio. But what's your advice for investors working with founders through that period?
Look, I think there are two, and this is my view on this, and I'm not I may have a slightly different view in the way I look at this. Look, I think I would possibly look for saying, are you backing a business model? And I know there is a stage of the company, but irrespective, frankly, are you backing a business model? Are you backing the co-founder or the team? And I think that decision has to be made. And I think if you are deeply into a company, then you would know who you're backing, by the way. And in most of the examples, I would argue that you would go and back not the business model, but the but the co-founder, because the business models can change, evolve, tweak, and you can come back in. And I think that is only done when you have a long-term relationship with the company, with the co-founder, because and you're tested, and you as an investor is possibly only tested in tough times. And that's when the entrepreneurial community essentially looks up to you and say, all right, this is the guy that, you know, we want on our side. Because anybody can back a great business model and keep backing it while it's great. The business model, every business model in today's technology business has 3 years shelf life. So, and no return in any fund is ever going to come in 3 years. So you possibly are going to see 2 changes in the business models for sure, for a scale company, by the way, irrespective of how you look at it. So the point I was trying to get to is you end up A, backing the co-founder and B, or the team, and B, be ready for that phase where the business model is going to come in and change. And that's the swing factor that you're looking for. And I think that conviction that you're referring to in the point probably is only around not the company, but the team. And so are you backing the team or you're not backing the team?
I couldn't agree with you more. I was talking to someone the other day, and we were having a conversation on top 10 relationships in life. And I realized of the top 10 relationships in life, 5 are with founders of my companies. And all those 5 relationships, they've been formed during tough times. Frankly, I treasure them, and they treasure those relationships because we've just gone through those tough times. And honestly, for me, that's what makes at least my role fun, to be with those companies and those founders during those tough times.
By the way, if you look back and you see, most people create great success with the same set of people repeatedly, and they stay together, whether it's businesses or you know teaming up, you know, and they always do it together. Like there is always this, you know, a loose cohort of people that are always together. And I somewhere feel, by the way, and it's a very disconnected point to the questions that you were asking probably, is I somewhere feel India lacks that to a certain extent, because I think a lot of us are far more in a very small individual buckets of ours versus, you know, as cohorts of people who are there, to kind of support each other a lot.
So I was going to ask you this question later, but I'll come to it now, which is, you know, you've come to this realization of, I want to work with friends, which, by the way, sounds like a very old man thing to say. Mm-hmm. But how have you come to this realization? And what's advice for sort of early founders on applying some of that?
Yeah, maybe it is an old, because I'm turning old probably. But I think you realize that you want to be with people who either are your friends or become your friends, right? So, and because, and a friend is not to be confused with saying you're letting go of each other's mistakes. That's not the point that one is trying to get to. It's not that, hey, you know, I'm going to be easy on you. That's not the point. It's to say, I can be open with you, right? And you realize that you need people who will back you in tough times. And therefore, for me, by the way, loyalty is a huge aspect within the company itself. For example, I think about 35, maybe 40% of the company or people in the company have spent more than 5 years, and we are a 10-year-old company, so have spent more than 5 years. My management team has spent an average of 7.5 years with me. And to me, that's loyalty. And to me, it is both ways, right? I know they are there for me, and I hope that I am there for them. And to me, that's friendship, right? Now, it need not be that I must hang out with them every social evening, but just the fact that you have a strong bond where just the look, you look into the eye of the other one, the other person knows what you are going through, and the nod from their side to say, we'll solve for it, is the exact thing that you need. And the reason why I say this even to the younger entrepreneurs is because you're going to face a lot of that soon. You just don't know when, but you are. And you cannot fight that alone, even though we will all think of ourselves as these, you know, amazing warriors, that we will go and fight this ourselves. Why fight it yourself when you can fight with a few others who will be on your side? So therefore, I am a big fan of, you know, having people, having investors, having, you know, having people as advisors, by the way, if you need them to be, so that you are surrounded by people who will support you through the good and the bad.
I think there is a very important learning there for early founders. And, you know, I often urge founders to date their co-founders for an extensive period of time. And sometimes you don't have that extensive period of time, but actually hang out with them in different settings, right? Don't just do one or two coffees together,
yeah.
right? Go actually sit with their families at home. Go actually go do an activity together. Do whatever, you know, if you guys drink, go truly have a lot of drinks together.
Yeah.
And that usually helps because you can't fake chemistry
yeah.
over multiple interactions. And then you really find out, you know, what makes that person tick. And I think that's what ends up with these, you know, lasting co-founder, investor partnerships.
Absolutely, absolutely. And by the way, I think I also tell this to a lot of the younger entrepreneurs right now, the new ones who are just starting off. Like when we started off 10 years ago, we didn't really have a pool of advisors to go to. We didn't know anybody who would, you know, who had been stupid enough to do what we were going to try and do. The group now actually has a bunch of people who've been stupid enough, right, and have tried to do these things. And so, you know, getting them into the fold in some shape and form is far more important because, you know, the best advisors are not the ones that are made on like a Excel sheet or a PowerPoint. They're basically just like a simple little nudge to say, why aren't you doing this versus that? And to me, those are the most valuable ones that I've gotten throughout my life. And they come in the most innocuous of the places. It could be when you're sitting with somebody next to on an aircraft or, you know, just catching up on coffee. And you don't even intend to be getting that advice where you get it and that changes the direction in which you're moving. Those are the people that you should surround yourself with such that, you know, you don't know when you're going to get something. It's just, but you have to be at least create the environment for it.
No, and, you know, you mentioned this aircraft thing. I don't know if you remember, you and I spent, I think, 3 hours on a flight from Bangalore to Delhi, and it was like a delayed flight. And we ended up at in the emergency row together. And yes. I think we just, we didn't even realize that flight was that long.
Yeah.
And one of the things I took away was how curious you were about everything that was happening and what we were doing. And I know you keep pushing yourself on this personal growth. You took on a board role at Paytm. You've invested in multiple companies. We're in, you know, Razorpay together. I know you invested in Nestaway. What dimension does that give you? You know, hanging out with some of the other startups. I know it's a time commitment, and I know you take that role seriously.
Look, I think the each one of these guys are phenomenal people, right? So whether it was Vijay at Paytm or, you know, at Razorpay or Amar at Nestaway, and there are like 15, 20 more, I think there is so much to learn. I actually have, you know, it's oxymoronic, but I, you know, they kind of pay you to learn, like, literally to say, I could have paid just to sat on their, you know, in to get whatever, sit in the conversation that they were having because I took away so much. And I think it is, on one hand, it keeps you very agile and, you know, knowing what's really happening in the world, because otherwise you're living in your own cocoon, which is phenomenal, by the way, but you're just in your own cocoon. And secondly, every one of successful entrepreneurs out there has a quirk. They're not like a very template.
They're not normal people.
They're not normal.
Founders are not normal.
They're not normal, right?
Yeah.
So what quirk is great that, A, you will not actually be able to build on it, but at least capture some component of it, because the reason why companies become successful is not because you do all the right things, is because you do one of those things really phenomenally well. And what is it that's getting some, what is that one thing that's getting, you know, someone to essentially create this, what can you take away from that? And you know, the learning has just been, you know, it's just been phenomenal. From that perspective, and you know, and people will ping you at any point of time in life. By the way, that's the beauty of these conversations and these relationships that you end up building with a bunch of them. They ping you not when they're having a great quarter or anything. They ping you and they're saying, "Hey, I am stuck and I need help here." And you know, you kind of sit through there and you know, you spend 2 hours probably, and that may be just it.
So we are in a couple of companies together, and you know what I've heard from founders is that Naveen says things that others just don't say, and he's available in the middle of the night. And to me, actually, frankly, that's great advice for me because that's what they treasure. So you should feel very good about that.
All right. Don't tell my wife. anyway, working too hard.
I think she already knows. I don't think anything's hidden from her. Naveen, I don't have anything else. I know, you know, you've been very kind with your time, and you know, I can keep going on with you. And but thank you so much for the time. Truly appreciate it. Last quick question. You know, I know you don't think beyond InMobi, but if you were starting up today, what business would you start up?
Look, I think there are obviously horizontals in which you could think about. There is obviously artificial intelligence that's just changing the world. There is things around blockchain. There is think about, I think probably something in the education space could be very interesting today. Something in the retail space could be very interesting. I think, you know, all of these industries are completely going to change in the years to come. And they are very, very, what one should say, still old economy in the way they're functioning. So I haven't really thought about this very deeply, by the way, if you do.
Yeah, you named like four different.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, I've never thought about this, but yeah. Maybe next time we catch up, I might have a better answer to you than.
Excellent. Than this. Thanks again for the time, Naveen.
And thank you. Thank you. I enjoyed talking. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. And you can find the transcribed version of this podcast on matrixpartners.in. You can also follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more updates.